Alex, hey, it's great talking to you again. Really appreciate your time. We're back for some more design intent. Myself, Tony Lato, Daniel Phipps, Aaron Hernandez, and of course the Liminouche creator, founder, Alex. You'll have to pronounce your last name for us, Alex.
Nice, Alex Nice.
Nice, okay.
Well, let's go.
Yeah, let's go. Okay, so same on my side. So I'm super happy to talk to you guys. Maybe we can you can introduce yourself of where you guys work. So the reason why we gather today is because I want to do this interview. Because I often have this question of whether you should be working in a consultancy or in-house, because there's really big differences that can happen at the end of doing 10 years of working in-house or 10 years of working in a consultancy. You will have very different skills. So that's why I think it's good to have both sides here on in this interview with Antonio, who will introduce himself, but he's basically the design leader at Dell. And we have Daniel Phipps and Aaron Hernandez, who are with founder and designer at Axis Design. So we have really two worlds, one with the in-house and one with the consultancy. So that's a good interview to learn on what are the pros and cons of each side.
Yeah, I think that's a good that's a good topic. I know I have people asking me that all the time. I'll let you go first, Daniel, since you're
okay.
You've kind of been around in both worlds.
Sure, I've for the first 15 years of my career, I kind of bounced back and forth a little bit. So right now I'm with Axis Design. Actually, I started the company in 2005, so I guess it's 2020, so that would be 15 years. Prior to that, I worked for a couple different companies, Dell being one of them. I worked for IBM and then another one. And in between there, I worked at a short stint at a consulting company up in the Chicago area as well. So for the first part of my career, I bounced back and forth a little bit, and then I kind of finally made the decision of, okay, I think the consulting thing is a good place for me to rest for a while. And so that's what I've been doing since 2005.
So 15 years running your own small business.
Correct.
Consulting for various companies.
Yeah, companies all over the country. Done some work for international companies as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, and for the record, I've actually hired Dan quite a bit to do work for me, working at Dell. So I'll give a quick introduction of myself. I'll give a bit of a history later. I'll let Aaron kind of talk about his role. But I'm Antonio Lato. I'm the design director for Latitude Notebooks at Dell. And I've been with Dell 13 years now. But I've been in the industry for quite a long time. Aaron?
So my name is Aaron, and I work here with Daniel at Axis. I've been here for, a little bit over 2 years?
Or 2.5 years.
Two and a half years. And this is all the experience, or real world experience I've had. And I know it's a huge question whenever, you know, you're graduating or you're about to graduate or you're in school. It's like, what should you do? Should you go the consultant route or the more corporate route? So I hope people get to learn.
Aaron, you say that you are, how many years of experience you have in the field?
Two and a half.
Okay. So that's perfect. So you can give us the, for me, I have probably 12 years of experience, and most of it is in consultancy. So we have like a good amount of people with different perspective and visions on the same on this.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. If the one thing I would say to anybody getting out in design, new in the design world, or even established in the design world, I think the single most important thing you can do is make sure that the mentor that you work for or with is the right mentor for you. I think that's, you know, my career was blessed with really fantastic mentors when I started at IBM right out of graduate school. And if it wasn't for those guys, and I'll name them. John Swansea was probably the first designer that I worked for a long time, who retired from IBM, Lenovo, a few years ago. He worked there for over 25 years, I believe. He was probably the first guy that really challenged me in terms of just like my skills and how to do things better. And to me, that was important. And I think the thing that I found also critical as a new designer was that, you know, we all work, you know, we want to have a good work-life balance, but I knew early on in my career that if I worked more hours, because of my skills were so limited when you're brand new, that, you know, trying to do 60 hours a week or even 70 or 80, that it would help accelerate my my learning curve. And so when I was doing things for him, working directly underneath him, I would just keep going and work harder and just keep going until I got it right. And so I felt like that was also a good thing. And I recognized that at the time. I knew that if I stayed and worked more hours, that it would help accelerate my skills and my abilities. And it did. The almost four years I worked there was really valuable. I don't think that I would have been as successful as I am now if it wasn't for that first job.
Yeah, I would concur. No matter which direction you go in a career in terms of your workplace scenario, it's really, as you pointed out, just a matter of practicing, right? So you would basically practice in hours, that's the same thing. So you just got to practice and practice until it just becomes sort of a natural thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, we all have ideas of what we think we want to be as designers. But we also, you should be able to recognize where you're good and where you're bad from a design perspective. Because we all can't be exquisite design researchers. We all can't necessarily be great at the front end or even, you know, detail design or design development. You know, there's so many elements in the design process that you need to have good skills at. And there are some people that are really good at all of it, but there's always some weaknesses. And I think you have to recognize what your weaknesses are and where your strengths are, use your strengths to help you to build your career, but also to try to develop those weaknesses so that you can get better. And I still have many, many weaknesses in my design abilities. You know, I look at some of the designers that I work with now, some of the younger guys and gals that are coming into Dell, and I see, when I look at them, I see all of my holes, all the things that I'm not good at.
Well, yeah. Also, I think with time, they learn new softwares, and then you, on your side, you tend to do more management. So there's a lot of things that somehow you lose or you don't practice anymore when they are actually practicing with this from the start. So yeah. I think naturally we are a bit. I think naturally it's not the skills sort of change, and they get better skills than we do because they are more used to the new software. But I think there's still the core knowledge of industrial design, which we can always bring as an input to them, which somehow they don't have, or sometimes they don't have, and they need that from us. So, yeah.
Yeah. So Dan, you when did you start at IBM? When were you there?
So actually, I was there right out of school. So that would have been 94, 95.
Where?
Here in Austin, actually.
Okay.
So there was a team here doing a lot of what was at the time like the RISC 6000 kind of stuff.
Tristan Marino?
Yeah, he was here. Pedro Alfonso.
There was another guy that I think I've met.
The manager of the team was a guy named Jeff Klein.
That's right. That's right.
And then there was they had a graphics person, like a usability person. And then one other designer that I can't recall the name of, what her name was. And so I kind of came into the team for a little bit. Actually, Pedro sort of took me under his wing and was the mentor for me in terms of like, okay, this is what a designer does, right? So coming out of school, you have what you think you do as a designer, but it's always different than the reality of what it is. So, right, exactly.
Yeah, and he, Dan's actually mentioning a person that we both have worked with, Pedro Alfonso, who's kind of notoriously famous in the Austin area in the ID world. I knew him. I had actually heard about him from IBM because he left IBM probably
in like 97, I think.
Yeah, and so he was working at Dell, but I like they talked about him all the time up until the point that I left. And so if you
he's the infamous Cuban.
Yeah, yeah, he's from Cuba. he came over
when he was like 8 or 9.
Yeah, the Freedom flights in the '70s, I think, and and interesting individual. Yeah, so he was kind of famous, and I had met him one time at an IDSA conference, I think in 2000. I met him 2001, I think, the Monterey IDSA conference. I had I think Dell was looking for a designer, and I had interviewed with him face to face there, and I never got any feedback at all after that.
Took him a while to figure it out.
Yeah, yeah. It was funny, yeah.
And so when you work in house and in consultancy, so for example, me, I know that because I work most of the time in consultancies, I don't have so many products on the market. So I probably work on more projects than someone who worked in house, but in the end, only a few projects are on the market. So I think there's something interesting here because when you are a young designer, you want to have products. And many guys think that they need to have these products in their portfolio in order to be hired. Mm-hmm. So which sort of makes sense when you start to reach like senior designer and management roles, that we expect you to at least have done some products so you're not like just a rendering guy.
Right.
But I think that there's a very big difference in that sense between both worlds. If you work at Dell or if you work at Axis, what do you think would be the difference in terms of the amount of products that you will have in your portfolio at the end?
I don't know if I would say there's a huge difference in terms of the amount of products that we work on that eventually make it to production. Even in a corporation, you work on a lot of things that don't ever end up for one reason or another, being launched as a product. The one big difference between, from my experience, between consulting and corporate worlds of design are, in consulting, you typically will work on a part of a project. So you'll work on the front end, let's say, of, okay, creating concepts, or here's a concept, now we need to refine it in CAD. So you usually will work on a section of a project, but not very often will you work on one from initial concept all the way through supporting it into tooling and production.
Right.
Those come by now and then, but it's fairly rare. So you'll just get a section of it, whereas in the corporate world, typically, and certainly at the level you are, Tony, is you kind of will take a project from very, very early on research phase, from initial conception all the way through supporting it, probably through the end of life, right? Which is multiple years after it was even started in production.
Right.
So that's a big difference, is you get a lot of depth in terms of understanding that entire process in a corporate world, whereas consulting, like I said, you just get little pieces of it. Now, on the flip side, there's pros and cons with that. In the consulting world, because you're usually working on shorter elements of projects, there's a wider variety of things that you're touching and working on. So you get exposure to a lot of different things, just not at the depth that you would in the corporate environment.
Yeah, I think, so as sort of someone who hires somebody, I don't necessarily believe, depending on the level that we're hiring, having a lot of products is necessarily a good or a bad thing. It's one thing, and I think the most important thing you want to have is from a, so if I'm hiring somebody and they've been in the consulting world for 8 or 9 or 10 years, you know, if they've been doing a lot of face-to-face, business-to-business operations for that consultancy, that's just, that to me, that's just as valuable, because we work, we, you know, we don't work in a silo, right? At Dell, we work in a large organization with many different disciplines that we have to interact with. So if that person has, you know, social skills that are good, that help facilitate the process, I think that's just as important as having the most beautiful portfolio. I mean, the portfolio is a huge, huge element. And so maybe they have conceptual work that they've done. And I think, you know, if you're in the consulting world and you're looking to go into a large corporation that has sort of a long history of product development and a strong brand, I think what you have to do is show a little bit of your thinking process, show some of your design process, and then really talk about your role and what you were doing within that, and to back up how beautiful whatever it is that you're working on. So hopefully you have a lot of beautiful things. And I think what I've seen with some people that I've interviewed, I think some of them miss that element of what they did in the what their role was and how they participated in the role with all the various people on the team. Was it a team of 12? Was it a team of 35? Was it just two people? Just as important, you know, are you working with a startup versus, like for you, Dan, you know, sometimes you do work for us, right? I've hired you to do things. And, you know, what was your role, you know, specifically, you know, those types of things. And I think, you know, for Aaron, now that he's 2.5 years in, and I know he's been assisting one of the other lead designers at Dell, as you know, basically as another contributor, you're almost like a part of the team, assisting getting things done. Right. And I know you guys come in and consultancies come in. I know at Dell, we use them for various types of projects, it's like crazy front end conceptual thinking, or it's like, hey, you know, like when I talk to you, Dan, it's usually like, hey, man, I've got because Dan has some very specific skills and we know each other very well and we work together really good. And it's easy for me to talk to him about whatever it is that I need done, and I know it's going to get done probably better than I can do it, which is why I would hire Dan, right?
Yeah.
And I know that he's got, you know, for him, you know, my logic behind the hiring is that, so one, he understands us, he understands design, he's a good designer, and he can also assist us in helping improve the design that we've already established, right? Because a lot of times it's like, hey, we've got this design and we're trying to smear it across a family. Right. And so you've got, like, when we were working on the desktops, right, we had a lot of, like, it's, you know, this size, and that size. And so how do we make all that work? There's a lot of learning that goes back and forth because we have a lot of conversations. And so that's one role. I think, you know, as a design consultant, if you're an individual, you know, I think that's an important thing to talk about, because it shows that you're not just trying to, like, I always get the impression, at least early on in my career, I had this impression with a lot of design consultancies that was like a bodybuilding contest. Like, who can get out and flex their pecs the best and show their calf muscles and, like, you know, who's going to have the shinier guns, right? They're doing all the stuff and trying to get in front. It's like, that's not really what I'm looking for. I'm like, hey, man, how do we, you know, we got to work together on all this. And I'm not smarter than you and you're not smarter than me. It's like we have to kind of figure it out and kind of get through the program, because there's a specific date and all of that stuff that we have to kind of work on.
Yeah, I would. So I think to Tony's point as well, I guess go back to the original question. For me, it's not necessarily super important that someone would show a ton of products in their portfolio that actually made it to the market. That's not the important thing. For me, the important thing is the story behind whatever it is they're presenting. They could be presenting a sketch or a concept or whatever, and it's really the story supporting it. And I think that's what you're saying as well, Tony, is it's the story of, I'm a part of a team that did this, or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And how it came to be.
Yeah.
One thing I'll say is, working in a consultancy, you do have to kind of adapt to the different clients, and you, like you were saying, like, you really get to at least know how they work, and really you do get to know the client you're working for and how they are and how they work and how that company does things is different than how a different client does.
Yeah.
So you kind of do have to adapt, and when it's good, and also you get to, like you said, work on different projects. Like we've worked on a variety of, like, since I've been here, like things that are completely different.
In the same hour, you'll work on, here's a lawnmower, here's a computer, or whatever. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's really valuable.
Yeah. I think that's to me, that's the strong point and the advantage of working in consultancy is that you do get a large variety of opportunities to work with different companies, with different projects, products in different industries, which I think is good. And I think, you know, I mean, you could go either way, right? So Dan started in corporate, then you kind of went off in the consultancy, but I could easily see somebody working in a consultancy for 10 or 15 years and then coming in as a strong design leader. It's like, hey, look at all this background that I've got. I've worked with X, Y, and Z type of companies, all these different types of people. Because in the corporate world, you know, not everybody thinks the same. You know, each business unit doesn't necessarily behave the same. And so sometimes it's like you're working with different, you know, almost different
companies,
right? Because of the behaviors of some people.
That is true. Yeah.
And that's just human. I mean, that's just sort of human to human interaction. There's no like clone that's walking. There's not clones walking around in all these various companies.
And also, the thing is that when you work in-house, like for example, if you do 5 years at Dell, it will be more like you become more expert in that field, but then that makes it also a bit harder to change the field. When if you work 5 years in a consultancy, then you have a large amount of products on your portfolio, and that allows you to go to knock at different doors. So somehow I think that if working in-house sort of puts you on a sort of train track that is harder to go outside this track.
Yeah.
If you work in the electronic industry, you become expert in that, and you will tend to be hired by companies who are doing similar work.
Yeah.
So for example, me, I have a lot of experience in electronics and aviation, and the moment that my portfolio had more aviation, then I was hired by people doing more aviation. So it's a sort of, it's always a sort of, I call it the train track. So you get inside one track, and it's very hard to go out of this track.
Yeah.
And the only way to go out of this track is either you create more different projects, which will be more appealing to a different industry, just to show that you could also apply the same methodology, the same creativity, the same skills to a different industry. So that would help to convince this new industry. So you actually have to either spend time doing this or work hard on creating these projects. Usually that's what I felt when after working and having like a specific specific projects in my portfolio. So I guess if you want to change tomorrow to work in the textile industry, it will be harder than for example Aaron, who maybe have touched a little bit of the textile industry when he was working in the consultancy.
Yeah, no.
The consultancy allows you more flexibility in the development of your career. I guess that's what I felt.
No, I think that's fair. I think that's probably a pretty good assessment. It's interesting because what you want as a designer, and I think that sometimes we forget as designers that, you know, the design process is the design process, you know, solving problems and understanding, you know, human needs and being empathetic is kind of, you know, sort of universal, right? But I do believe, like, you know, for you, for example, you know, you've done a lot of aviation work. I think, you know, there's some subject matter expertise that you start to develop in that world, so that when you start talking to those guys, they're like, okay, yeah, this guy, there's less of a runway to orient you towards what they need. It's just like I use Dan a lot for very specific things. And the reason why is that I don't have to have a 2-hour long conversation on, okay, well, these are the products and these are the types of people who we're doing it for. And then, you know, it's going to be this and we've got this, right? I don't have to do that. And it saves me a lot of time and effort because there's a track record. So I think that's important. But I think, like, you know, if I was, you know, when I look for designers, like recently I was looking for a designer and we were looking for a kind of a newer entry level-ish type of designer, somebody with 2 to 5 years experience. I all the portfolios I looked at were all pretty diverse from what they were doing. I was really just looking for, you know, can they cooperate? You know, what kind of graphic design skills do they have? Do they have an attention to detail with how they put the portfolio together, how they talk about what they're doing? Because sometimes you can tell when somebody's kind of full of shit when they're talking about something that you know wasn't a project that they would have done by themselves. They're like, okay, what was your role, right? And when they're like, oh, no, I designed this whole thing, it's like, I don't know, I don't believe that, right? Because sometimes you come across something very complicated and you know there was a dozen people working on it, 5 designers and 10 engineers or whatever, right? You know that it was a big operation. And when they're limited, because I kind of get worried when they're not willing to kind of tell me up front what they were doing, then I tend to kind of say, okay, well, maybe this person isn't the right person. Maybe too much ego. Yeah.
Or they're just not quite secure yet or confident or who knows. But.
Yeah, I think humility is really important. And I know it's tough because, you know, in design, we want to be, we want to sort of quote unquote be the best, you know, when we're putting ourselves out there for the work. But humility, I think, can go a long way when you're, you know, especially when you're interviewing with like 6 or 7 different types of people from various backgrounds. Like when I'm doing our interviews, we've got 6 people that are also interviewing the same person. And so, and they all have completely different backgrounds and from different parts of the world than I am. And so they're going to have a different perspective and a viewpoint of what they think this person's all about. So honesty is definitely going to be carry a long way.
Those all day long interview ordeals.
They do it when it's getting to the serious point. Like,
do they?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Dan's talking about Dell. Sometimes our interview process will, if we have a candidate that we think is the right person, they'll come in and they'll spend a few hours, you know, an hour at a time with different people.
5 or 6 people.
Sometimes it'll be a group context where you're presenting in front of 6 or 8 or 10 people. I've seen that and kind of get, you know, grilled by them. And the interview will go on even to dinner at that night.
Yeah. It's grueling.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have to be on your toes the whole 24 hours.
What would you say are the, because you talk about humility. I also think that humility is a value as a designer, but also as a person in general, more than ego. And what would you say are the values that you would look for when you hire someone? So I guess there's a lot of different type of people, and then like we don't look for specific values, but what are values that you would consider important for a person to be integrated in your team?
Aaron, did you want to comment?
Well, I would say, I mean, you have to be able to or want to work first and foremost. But good question, actually, values.
Well, Dan, you've hired probably more. You've been involved in more hiring and firing than I've ever been a part of.
Well, fortunately, I haven't had to fire too many people, but it has happened.
Yeah.
So what do I look for? Well, as Aaron just mentioned, I mean, so first and foremost, you want somebody who is interested in working and working hard, right? You want someone who is, and sometimes that's a little bit hard to parse out when you just interview somebody. So some of that's a little bit of a roll of the dice, but personality is at the top of the list, right? You have to be able to get along with the person. They have to be able to communicate well. take direction, provide feedback, all those sorts of things. So if someone has the, you know, the best design skills and, you know, everything, if they don't have the personality, it's not going to work, right? Whereas on the flip side, they may not have very good design skills, but if they have a good personality, at least you'll get along.
Yeah.
So there's that, right? For me, it's also, I have to look at, okay, where is the person at in terms of their career and how can they fit in and contribute? So those are some other things that are important as well. I know in the corporate world, you kind of have to look at, okay, what role, what's the job title, right? And if it's, you know, if it's typically a little bit more of a senior level role, they're going to be working with other teams, you know, marketing teams or others, and they have to be able to, they should be able to show that they can communicate and work successfully amongst the other teams. Whereas in the consulting world, you have to be able to take a project, communicate back and forth with the customer. So there are some overlaps in communication skills.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with most of that. I think, you know, for me, when I'm looking for teammates, are you able to get along with them? Do they have the skills to fulfill the role that they're being hired for? Do you think that they have growth ability and opportunity within them? So, you know, looking for people that want to grow and learn and actually get better, right? So I'm interested in this person's, do they have a ceiling? And is it beyond, you know, normal human's reach? So I'm interested in that person that really wants to grow exponentially. In our industry, or where I work at Dell, I think having people that are self-starters, you know, people that can initiate things on their own, and so go and see something like, hey, I see there's a problem, I'm gonna go and tackle this. It's not very glamorous, it's not very sexy, but it's something that they're going to go and do, but it will help improve the product, or it may help improve the process. And so those kinds of things I think are really important. I know, you know, my team right now, I think I've got some of the best people in the industry working for me right now. And because they're all sort of able to kind of go off and do things on their own, and tackle things that are they're able to tackle problems, that they're able to help the team, the greater team, which is the most important. And you know, they get the recognition, but it's not something sexy that they're going to, I mean, they might put it in, you might want to put it in your resume or your portfolio as like, hey, what are you doing there at that company? It's like, well, I did these things. I'm going and I'm dealing with these regulatory people, you know, like labels, for example, on our products. You know, how can we do them better? Is there a better way to can we make them look better? Can we consolidate them? Can we put them on one label? Does it have to be five labels? I mean, all those little things, like as a designer, it's not really,
it's not glamour work.
No, it's not glamour work, but it's the whole idea of, you know, every little angle, every little millimeter has a big impact as you add them all up, because, you know, elegant, beautiful solutions just don't happen because, you know, it looks great in a rendering. There's a lot of effort that goes into making something fantastic and beautiful. And so all those silly little things that are kind of boring and mundane and bureaucratic kind of have to be dealt with. And people that want to go and do that kind of stuff, I find very valuable.
For me, the thing that I find very important, so besides being friendly, being motivated, not being lazy or full of excuses, so this should be like the given. One thing that I find very important is that if I give you a project, if I have a client coming and I give you a project, I know that you can take it from A to Z and you don't need me to be behind all the time. So someone who is like proactive and confident in his process is for me like a very important point. And this, of course, yeah, experience helps, but I think it's really something which I find very important. I work with some people who I had to be behind all the time and motivate them, help them to find new directions or bring orientation to the product, making sure that everything is on track. And I find this very time consuming for me compared to someone who like, okay, you give him the project, he knows where to go, blah, 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 blah. And the only thing that you do is just making sure that things are all right and that he is happy and that he has all the elements that he needs to perform to his best. And that's even on the side of the management role, it's a huge difference in terms of the time that this person takes compared to the other one. One brings a lot to the project and to the company, and just one is more like somehow needs a lot of help. So in a way, in the beginning, it's okay when you are young, because it's normal that you need help and you need support and you need to learn basically. And we are here to give this knowledge. So in a way that's normal, but I think quickly when you are young, you should quickly try to be that your passion and your helps you to move forward by yourself, that you are proactive somehow.
Well, that brings us back to the point you said at the beginning, where you just put in the time and practice, right?
Yeah.
So that's how you do it.
Yeah. Lots of time. I think, you know, when you're new and you're learning, sometimes I think, you know, looking at, I mean, there's lots of different companies you can go and work for in different organizations, whether it be a big company, small type of corporate environment, large, small consultancy. I think you have to kind of look at what's the fire that you're going to be thrown into and where and how hot do you want to get? And what I mean by that is, like, you know, for example, like Dan, you know, there's Dan and Aaron, there's two people working in this consultancy. And so that leads me to believe that Aaron probably gets a lot of extra experience that most senior people would get. Whereas if it was a consultancy of, say, 25 people, Aaron would be working for, so, you know, like a studio head, right? You know, one guy that would interface with the client, and Aaron would probably not talk to the clients, but once a year. But now I imagine you probably interact with your clients quite a lot because there are two people. So I think from that perspective, you know, that's really accelerating Aaron's growth and his and what he's learning and kind of like, you know, what works, what doesn't work. You know, what are these clients, what are they really looking for, and really trying to be empathetic to the business. And I think it's important that we're trying to understand what the business is. I know, like, when I started at IBM, we were working on an entire new generation of computers for them at the time. And it was like me and one other guy working for, you know, a couple of very senior designers. And it was a lot of work. And I mean, it was a total fire. In fact, I was a contractor and working for, you know, John, and he had some, you know, some illnesses that he couldn't travel to Taiwan as much. And so I wound up traveling probably before, I know, if I had someone working for me at that level of experience, I wouldn't be putting them on an airplane to go to Taiwan and work with a supplier unless I was going with them. And so I was being introduced to things that I never thought I would be introduced to. Yeah, I was thrown into the fire deep in traveling to Taiwan, dealing with the suppliers. I remember one trip I wound up, the trip kept getting delayed and delayed and delayed, where I wound up staying there for a month in the hotel. I recall my fax bill cost more than the hotel bill because of all the faxing back and forth between me and my bosses.
Faxes.
Yeah. The back when faxes, you would receive a fax. I think it was like to take a fax in, the first page was $10 and it was $3 a page after that. And then to send one out, it was like $15 for the first page and $5 for every fax after that, like every page. It was ridiculous. And I remember the fax bill was way more than the actual hotel bill itself. So my point really about, you know, what type of fire do you want to get into is you may be the kind of person where you feel like if I could go into a place where I'm going to have way more responsibility to really learn a lot of different elements of the business, that maybe that's what you want to do. Or you might see yourself as, I think I'd rather go work in a place that's a little bit more structured. Maybe there's a little bit more process in terms of how the people are handled so that I can learn, you know, the more as a layer approach versus like a lot of little verticals, you know, extreme up and down of activities. So, I think it's, each person has their own thing. And I think you have to ask yourself, what is it that you're trying to do and what's your five-year goal? I think that's important. Where do you want to be in 5 years? Because you may say, hey, I'm going to go work at this place for 2 years, get a certain amount of experience. It's going to help me stair step to the next level. It may give me enough experience and knowledge to get into maybe a larger corporation or something like that.
Yeah, totally. There's one thing that we haven't discussed, which I find important in the skills that you will develop. Is that usually when you work in a consultancy, the times are shorter because that's how consultancy make money. The shorter you spend, the budget is the same. So if you do it in less time, then the consultancy makes more money. So usually the projects tend to be shorter than if you were in house. If when you are in-house, the objective is to make the greatest product as possible, so it sells and the company works better. And that's quite a very different aspect of both sides. Because for me, so the deadlines are always like super tough. And this forces you to learn how to be quick and how to be fast. So you learn how to have like a very efficient process, a very efficient workflow. You learn how to use your software with in a way that you don't waste your time all the time, or you learn how to be extremely organized, because you know that when the deadline comes, the more organized you are in the beginning, the easier the last hours will be.
Right.
So on my side, I felt like I had to learn how to be fast all the time to match the deadlines. So I don't know, how is it in-house, if you guys have this perception that you have more time to develop a product?
From my experience, I wouldn't look at it like that so much. I think that there was, when I was at, the last company I worked for in a corporate was Dell, right? So where you're at now, and obviously it's a little bit of a different company than now, but I still feel like there was so much work to be done that if you weren't on your toes and efficient in doing it, that eventually that was going to show.
Yeah.
And that you would get feedback of, hey, you're falling behind, or things aren't getting covered as they needed to be, or whatever. So I never felt like, I always felt that I need to be as efficient as I can be. One, to get the work done, too, because that's just kind of how I am. I'd like to work efficiently. So I mean, you're probably the same way, yeah. Tony. So
yeah, you have more time, correct, but you have, so we have a development process that's very rigorous, and it's been honed over, all these years, 25 years now, and we have different phases that we have to go through, different phase gates, where we're getting, basically you get kind of approval to go on to the next step, to go into the next step, to go into the next step. And they're pretty structured. So it's, 6 to 8 weeks between each one. And so, you really, you kind of got to be moving. Sometimes, so you have more time because you're working on that product all the way from the beginning to the end. So it feels like you have more time, but in between each one, you have to get so much work done. And then once you get to that point, you're going from one phase up to the point where you want to get the tool release. Well, once you get there, your design has to be like 80 to 90% complete before you get to that last 10% before tool release. So there's a lot of things happening going through there, and there's a lot of little things that you have to hustle with and deal with, but you get the entire development cycle to get the tool release, and then there's a lot of work that happens right after that once the tools are completed and you're looking at checking parts. So we talked about the golden sample, where you're signing off on parts, making sure they're cosmetically correct, the colors are right, the processes are right. And sometimes you might even go into some of those tooled builds. We call them DVT builds, and we may do more testing, thermal testing, and other things that may have some impacts on the design. So, you're kind of always working on it, but you have to be at the right point in the process. So if you're behind, you can be the bottleneck, and you don't want to be the bottleneck.
You're a bottleneck for a much bigger problem at that point in time.
Yeah, I don't like it when I'm the bottleneck. When I'm the bottleneck, it's always, everybody else is standing there with their arms crossed and they're tapping their toes waiting for you to finish, and that's not a good feeling. You don't want to be that guy. But some products are, for example, like the Optiplex Ultra 7070, which is a new product that we came out with. We spent a long time working on that. We probably spent a year in pre-development before it was even considered a plan of record product or program to go into the normal sort of development process pipeline that we have. And that took a lot of iterations. It took a lot of work. We spent a long time, but it wasn't an easy kind of product. Like, okay, we're going to redesign this thing that we already know what it looks like prior, and we're just going to do a better version of it. It was a total reconfiguration of what we think the computer should be for a desktop machine. It's completely different and new that no one had done before.
To Alex's point, though. Especially coming up from school, you do really have to learn how to work efficiently, because everything you do counts, right? It's like in school you get like this feel like you could just keep sketching and ideating and you can almost just keep going and going. But when it comes to at least consultancy, it's like every sketch, even if it's good or bad, like it counts. Like you have to. If you want to get more ideas out, like you have to learn how to work fast. Like usually, like if I feel like I don't have enough concepts or not good enough concepts, I have to work faster so that I can get more ideas out. So, to Alex's point, I think in a way you do really have to learn how to work efficiently and fast and figure it out. I think when I got hired, Daniel was like, have you ever used the Wacom tablet? And back in the day, we didn't have those in school. I think the university I went to does now. And I was like, no. And he's like, well, you got to either sink or swim. So he was like, start swimming.
Figure it out.
Yeah. And I think within like a week, we had like a concept presentation. Like from the day I got hired to the... Like a week from then, we had a meeting with a client to check out concepts. So in a way, you do have to really get your pace and really work efficiently and learn how to do things faster.
And to Aaron's credit, he's done phenomenally well.
Yeah, he's still here.
He jumped in the deep end and kept going.
Yeah.
But this is interesting because for example, when you work in a consultancy, okay, you can think of your concept and do some loose sketching, or you can think of your concept and become quick at doing good sketching, so you don't have to redo them. So I'm not saying that when you're in-house, you have the time to, and the freedom to do everything you want and then it's relaxed. But it's more crucial when you are in a consultancy.
Yeah.
That's why I feel.
Everything makes a difference.
I have to work a lot. I think maybe you work more in-depth. When you work in house, you go, when you do research, you go, maybe you go, you, it's very important to go in depth of this research. When in consultancy, deadlines are usually shorter. You work like 2 weeks, 3 weeks on the project. So you don't have time to go as much in depth.
Yeah.
Even to like the point where like you were saying, like making sketches faster, like the way that I make my layers, the way that I name things and save, everything is just based upon the time and what's going to be faster. Yeah, just like I've learned that, you have to get organized and do things a certain way, because otherwise you'll just fall back. And like even learning the software, or like you said, sketching is not just about the sketch. It's just about how like I structure everything so that the sketch and everything goes perfectly fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And experience is good for that, because at some point you reach a level where you become flexible with all this. So in the beginning, like, I remember me, I was struggling a lot because I was slow in 3D and CAD. And so I could be very quick in the beginning with sketching. And then the time that I saved by being quick with sketching, I would lose it when it came to CAD and 3D. And at some points, because you have all these experience and you practice, then you're not limited by your skills anymore. And then everything becomes more flexible. And then you it's like you become a ninja, you know? Mm-hmm. Imagine if you haven't done sport for 2 years and you try to climb a wall, then you arrive on top of the wall, you are all sweaty, and you spend so much energy. And a ninja arrives and he's like, and he's on top of the wall, and you feel like he hasn't spent energy. Yeah. And I feel the beauty of the experience is this, is that when you see a project and it's a bit complicated, you can arrive and just unlock it because you can spot where the problems are, because you're not somehow in the steering wheel trying to do all the CAD and all this and struggling to do all the CAD. You have these skills and they're not slowing you down anymore. So you have time, you have the time and the experience to use your brain to see things differently.
Yeah, I think what I would say then for the designer, no matter what level you're at, is what, you know, everybody, like I said before, everybody knows what they're strong at and what they're weak at within the skills. Is when you see somebody that has a skill better than you on one particular thing, is to go and ask questions and ask for advice and to seek the what is the thing, because sometimes, you know, with a software or CAD package, it's like, oh, if I just knew how to do these three things, I can eliminate the 12 steps that I'm doing now in order to get to the same point. And I know, like, I've even come ask Dan, like, how did you make this, and you showed me like the most efficient way when we were doing patterns. Sure. Right. And so it's like, okay, now I got it. And then you know, then we called it the Dan Phipps method. And so then I had the one younger designer working for me. I'm like, hey, look at this guy's CAD, learn the Phipps method, because I need you to do this better. You know, you've got to know how to do it. Now he's that particular individual is really, really good. Oh, at the Creo Pro E, yeah, you know, yeah. Knowing the Phipps method, knowing all these things. Right. And so we, at least he and I, we call it the Phipps method. But I think that's important, because you kind of have to let your ego down a little bit so that you can, you know who to go and ask help from to kind of get better at doing things. And I think it could be something as simple as, you know, graphic layout for your PowerPoints. You know, it's okay to take somebody's PowerPoint that's beautiful and to just repopulate it with your own information and just kind of borrow that. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't think you have to kind of like recreate the wheel every time.
I think this comes with time also. When you get older, you care less about these things because you feel like, okay, I have proved enough. I don't need to prove to anyone, or at least not as much. But when you are young, you feel like, okay, the thing that you create is more like your stuff, and I think there's more like question of protection of your ideas and things like this. And with time, then you care less about that.
Yeah.
You have this feeling also, or do you have this thing that when you were younger, you are more protective of your ideas and the thing that you are creating, that now you give more share more?
Dan, well, how do you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would say I would be protective, but it's more of maybe lack of confidence when you're younger, right? Yeah. Or you don't know what the boundaries are. Whereas, okay, as you gain experience and confidence and you've done it 100 times, you just are more relaxed about the whole thing. And you know, if there's a problem here or there, it's okay. And if you don't know something, it's fine. You know, you understand that you don't have to know everything and you can just ask somebody.
Yeah.
Or tell somebody, we don't know.
Yeah.
Right? There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess as with experience, and that's same as in life, right? You become more aware that, you know, it's okay to be limited in some fashion and let people know it.
Yeah.
So
that makes things more easy also.
Yeah.
That makes things more easy to say to someone, okay, I don't know how to do, help me, than pretending that you know, and then finally you don't learn, or you, Okay, do you guys want to add something else, or?
No, this has been a great conversation. Yeah.
The last thing I would say is probably if you don't know, there's probably no right or wrong answer. It would be more of what you're willing to take and learn from everything. But there's probably, unless you know that you want to be like a specific designer for something, like a car designer or aviation designer, and that's your only dream, then I would say there's no real right or wrong answer as to whether to go into consultancy or corporate.
I would say the same. I think you know, it's important to find the right people to work for and work with. Mentors are important, supremely important, especially early on in your career. I think one wrong step can cause you, you know, within a decade to be out of the profession if you take a wrong turn. So I would have everyone think about when they're interviewing for a job that they're not just interviewing you. You are interviewing them. You want to understand their culture, what behaviors go on, what's their process, how do they decide what's right and what's wrong. You know, is it just based on one person's sole ego, or is it like, you know, I mean, there's many things to go on to make a product the right way or the wrong way, and you know, I think, you know, that's. I think that's really important. I mean, and then if you're trying to break in into those areas and you really are, maybe you're working a design job where you're not really confident with what skills they're giving you, you got to take the time on your own, you have to put your own time in doing your own thing. Working on products that maybe interest you, or if you think that you're doing something in the design problem that you're developing is you don't believe to be the right thing, then on your own, do what you think is the right thing. So that when you do show your portfolio, like, hey, this is what the company said to go and do, and this is what the customer liked, but this is what I feel like to be the best opportunity for this particular product, right? So I think that goes a long way, you know, kind of showing that you have some initiative to go and look at things in a different way. But you've got to find, I just can't stress enough about the mentor and finding the right people to kind of work with and talk to and get ideas from about what you're doing. It's just really, really important.
Yeah. And also to go where you enjoy. I think that's important. Because you may have the choice between going to a famous place with a big name or a place where they are good, but you seem that there's a more friendly atmosphere and all this. And in the end, I don't know, I think it's important to go to the big names and things like this, but in fact, you'll be more happy in a place where you feel good, as long as, of course, there must be a quality. Like, you cannot go to somewhere where it's not good just because they are friendly, but the friendliness is and the atmosphere is sometimes more important, because you spend 8 hours of your day, or maybe much more than that, in at your job. The people that will make you happy are the people that surround you. It's not because you do a Photoshop rendering that you will be happy. It's because of the people that you have around you in the team. They are the ones that you go to have lunch with. There's the one who, I don't know, that makes your life. So because in London, there are consultancies who are famous for having a lot of ego. And I see people going there and they're so happy because they feel, okay, look, I'm in this company now, it's so cool. And then you see them leaving 1 year after thinking that they had such a bad experience. So yes, of course, quality of the work is important and you need that. You have to fight to go to the best company you can. But once you have the choice, also the atmosphere and how you feel with the people is very important.
Yeah.
All right.
I think that's great. This is a really good topic. I think we could probably spend hours talking about it. Appreciate the time, Alex. It's really been good.
Yeah, thank you a lot. Yeah, same for me.
Yeah.
Thanks, Alex.
Very good.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Good to talk about these topics, in fact.
No, it's a lot of fun. I think, you know, again, I would say, you know, we didn't talk about why we wanted to do this, at least for me. And this is one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast, which is the opportunity to talk to people from different parts of the world, different industries that do design, that have success, and are, you know, they're grinding it out as a designer. And because every, you know, every experience is valuable, and you know, knowing and learning, you know, again, you know, mentors are it's a two, being a mentor, mentee, friendships, those kinds of things are two way. And I think, you know, there's a lot to be learned from everybody. And you know, I think increasing your friendships within this industry is great. And so that to me, I think that's, you know, I you know, that's what makes me really happy about this. And so getting the chance to talk to you and have Dan and Aaron, you know, in the room and talking with all these guys about it. And, you know, to me, this is what I get excited about, you know, getting to come here and talk to Dan and Aaron. You know, I mean, I obviously have respect for Dan, and I like Aaron a tremendous amount. And I think, getting to come and just talk about random design stuff is really awesome. And, you know, I appreciate it. Glad you guys get to do this with me.
Yeah, that's fun. And, you know, for me, it's, I would say Tony is definitely more the predominant force behind doing it. And I'm maybe just riding your coattails a little bit. But for me, it's like, okay, I'm maybe a little too comfortable in what I'm doing day to day. And so, you know, doing the podcast and, you know, meeting with you, Alex, is, you know, is good for me because it's a little bit out of the norm. It's a little, maybe, I mean, it's not uncomfortable, but it's just, yeah. Well, let's mix it up and do something different, right?
Yeah.
So, which is always a good thing.
And I just tagged along. I like podcasts, and I listen to podcasts a lot, and I don't know, I think it's good to talk and to just get things out, and especially I love design, so why not?
Yeah. Fantastic. Beautiful.
Yeah. And I think also that your podcast is interesting also because you have this experience. And you have this experience that which is valuable for a young designer to learn from. So if you have 15 years at Dell, you have a lot to transmit, to teach, to give advices to people who don't know about this industry. Yeah. So it's important to learn from those who have this experience. That's why I think that your podcast is very valuable for this, because you have the knowledge that that people need. So it's important to hear it, to listen to the podcast.